You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for almost the last 12 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, we're coming down off that UFC 299 hangover. We had a fight night over the weekend from the Apex. Marcin Tybura defeats Tai Tuivasa via technical submission in the first round of their heavyweight main event. In fact, did you notice that now it just sounds like we're saying Martin? It just sounds like we're saying Martin Tybura. To which I say, man, have we always been saying that? Or did we switch it up again? Are we switching up every name in the UFC multiple times over guys' careers, seemingly just so I don't know how the fuck to say it?
Listen, it's not all about you. Maybe that's the first thing you need to understand.
It is.
It also seems, though, that like now it was Marcin Tybura, right? But like
that's what I thought.
The C has taken on like kind of a CH kind of thing going on. I mean, don't get dug in on anything when it comes to pronunciations. Especially my word of advice here, I don't want to put a cap on how high the big homie Tybura can rise in the UFC's heavyweight division. I'm going to say, don't lose any sleep over how to pronounce the guy's name until he's got a title fight booked.
Wow. Wow. Savage. That was just ruthless.
I'm just trying to help you prioritize, because I know that you get in your head about some of this stuff. I'm saying, like, let's try to focus on the important pronunciations. Let's make sure we're getting Ilya Topuria and shit like that down, and then we'll move on to the others.
Then you go down to the Ovince St. Preux Kennedy Inzichukwu fight, nope. And every guy in the broadcast booth is saying the name a different way. Every one of them. During the fight, every one of them is saying it a different way. Making a joke out of it, in fact.
Mm-hmm. This is, though, where nicknames could really come to our rescue in this sport. The widespread use of nicknames. We don't have to live this way. We could just start to call a guy Bruiser or something, and then he's Bruiser, and boom, we're set. Don't have to worry about the pronunciation change in 6 weeks from now.
I would have said that a great nickname for Kennedy Njukukwu would have been the Midwest Choppa. But that's taken, apparently. Your boy Isaac Dulgarian is the Midwest Choppa. Now, I'll be perfectly honest. When I read the name Isaac Dulgarian on my bout order, I imagined someone different.
I imagined perhaps an Eastern European fellow.
Exactly. He could have been wearing a traditional hat, you know, a big fuzzy traditional hat walking to the cage. Instead, we get American wrestler nicknamed the Midwest Choppa, Isaac Dilgarian. Not what I expected.
Yeah, it does. You hear about a fellow named Dilgarian and you think that he owns a couple tracksuits, you know?
Yeah.
You just, that's where your mind goes. However, I gotta say, if you include any sort of regional designation in your nickname, you've already halfway won me over. At that point, it's up to you to screw it up, because I love it. Like, you can take a boring ass nickname. You can take a nickname where, you know, you're just like, imagine if you were just the Choppa. Like, it'd be like, okay, whatever. Or, you know, you're just the Pitbull. But if you're like the East St. Louis Pitbull, brother, I'm interested to know more.
Yeah. It also helps differentiate you from the competition, especially if your nickname is Pitbull. Then everybody's going to be like, oh, I know this guy. He's the Pitbull of East St. Louis.
Yeah. That's a specific kind of Pitbull.
Not to keep harping on the nicknames, but did you see that two Bam Bams showed up on this card on Saturday and both Bam Bams got choked unconscious?
Are you saying that perhaps for all the virtues of a Bam Bam, it does in fact alert opponents to potential deficiencies in your game?
Like, if your nickname is Bam Bam, it's obvious you got some holes in your game.
Like, you don't think that the nickname Bam Bam was given to him in the Iowa wrestling room? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, his nickname's not the alligator, right? It's not it's not the boa constrictor.
See, yeah, that is true. That if you had to go in and fight a guy sight unseen, and you're like, okay, well, what do we know about him? We got 5 minutes here in the locker room before they call the name, and we got to walk out. And they're like, well, he's nicknamed the boa constrictor. And it's like, so we want to stay away from him, basically. Yeah. We want to fight this one at range. Don't let him get a hold of you, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, he's nicknamed the boa constrictor, and he's got 8 names, right? should maybe don't let it go to the ground.
Yeah, we want to keep this one standing.
Tough night for Bam Bams all the way around. Remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. But if you want even more of the Co-Main Event, you can find Ben Folks and myself all week over on Patreon. Hit us up at patreon.com/co-main-event and get loads of extra audio and video content, as well as access to our official Discord message board, where they're talking fights and a lot of other stuff literally all the time. It's like MMA Twitter without the assholes. You get the fight talk, you get the memes, but you don't get Steve 101257801 on there saying, fuck your feelings. And if the UFC fighter doesn't like his contract, he shouldn't have signed it. It's MMA social media without the bad shit. Everybody knows by now we're a completely independent podcast. We don't have the backing of a big parent company or even one of the major MMA websites. We're just two guys talking into microphones. We've been doing it for over a decade. But the truth is, we can only keep making the show with your support. Help keep the CME alive by joining up to become part of the awesome community over at patreon.com/co-main-event. Another way you could support the show is by going to co-main-event.com and checking out our merchandise shop. We got t-shirts, we got hats, we got hoodies, we got lots more. Stop by and pick up your best-selling Daddest Man on the Planet coffee mug, a great gift for any dad in your life. You can get the Dundasso t-shirt, the hoodie, you can get the Bobby Knux t-shirt, you can get the Volcamania t-shirt. Just go to the website co-main-event.com. Click the link at the top of the page that says shop. We partner with our friends at Superconductor on the shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up over at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor. This week we got music from our guy James, aka the Funk Soul Brother, a retired MMA fighter and hip-hop producer living in Seoul. He sent us some new tracks a while back, and if you like what you hear from them on the show, you can check out more over at Instagram.com/FSBBeats or on YouTube.com/C/FunkSoulBrotherBeats. And just to carry on the grand tradition of having to spell at least one word in the name of every musical act we feature, we should note that the word soul in Funk Soul Brother is spelled S-E-O-U-L. 3 rounds, as usual, this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, all of our positive energy goes out to the big homie, Mark Coleman, who continues to have a hell of a last couple weeks. We'll talk about the legacy of the hammer in and out of the cage. And in round number two, what's really going on with Conor McGregor, his contract, and Nate Diaz suddenly being all nice and shit? suspicious. And in round number three, Saturday night, Rose Namajunas returns after back-to-back losses and 6 months away. And of course, the UFC marks the occasion with a relatively anonymous ESPN card from the stony, silent confines of the Apex. All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff, but first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Sean Diggity McIntosh of Harrison, Michigan, who writes, God damn you folks in Dundas for what you've done to our boy Tai Tuivasa after you've cursed him with your witchcraft prophecy. He doesn't seem to belong with the top 15 heavyweights these days. Now, everybody remembers back in 2022, right? When we had the prophecy saying that Tai Tuivasa would be the UFC heavyweight champion at the end of the year against all odds and against all common sense. And we came close to pulling it off. Damn, I still say we could have pulled it off if the UFC hadn't fucked around and put him in there with Ciryl Gane, basically just to use him as a stepping stone to prop up Ciryl Gane, who now barely even seems worth it, in my opinion.
I mean, the Ciryl Gane fight was how you get to a heavyweight title if you're tight.
Didn't have to be.
Well, sure, we could have just given him a title shot, for Christ's sake.
We could have put him in there with the Des Moines taxi driver, you know?
Des Moines. This motherfucker said Des Moines. There are listener mail emails being dashed off as we speak on that one.
My wife was born in the great city of Des Moines. I know how to say it, all right?
I will say this to Mr. Diggity of Harrison, Michigan. Don't you put that on us. Don't you put that evil on us. Listen, we did the best we could by Tai Tuivasa. We all know this about the man at this point, right? He has a certain set of skills. He does not have other certain sets of skills. That is what he brings to the table. It's part of what we like about him. He's a certain kind of fighter. Now, you know, when you are that certain kind of fighter, you don't want to be taken down and end up on your back in some of these fights. That's just not where you're going to win it, man. And he looked like he was doing his Tai Tuivasa stuff for like the first 90 seconds, 2 minutes of this fight. Did he not? Goes out there. He had your boy Tybura looking a little nervous.
Yeah, busted him up. Had a little blood, a little bit of color streaking down the face of Marcin/Martin Tybura. Yeah, I feel kind of bad for Tai Tuivasa. Not only because he followed up his 5-fight win streak from 2020 to 2022, now with a 4-fight losing streak, but also because at some point you could kind of tell that Tai Tuivasa was like, okay, I'm going to take this shit serious now.
Yeah.
Right? Because he has started showing up looking in better shape by Tai Tuivasa standards than he used to look before. He's not just spamming crazy hillbilly haymakers out there trying to knock the other guy out. He's throwing leg kicks. He's trying to be a fighter. And it seems like ever since then, things have gone straight down the toilet for Tai Tuivasa. So I kind of feel bad for the guy because it seems like he tried to make a bunch of positive changes in his fighting style and maybe how he prepares. I don't know. And it just seems like it hasn't brought him any success. So like, I don't know. It tugs at my heartstrings a little bit to see what has become of the big homie Tai Tuivasa.
Yeah. It is still though, like he is going to do a certain thing.
Yeah.
And if you have an answer for that thing, then you can beat him. If you have an answer for that thing and you can maintain consciousness long enough to put that game plan into effect. And, you know, first round, that guy's always going to be dangerous. First round, when he's standing up and winging those punches at you, anybody could have problems against him. And here it's just, though, that like as soon as Tybura gets in on a deep takedown attempt up against the fence where it's like, you know, to his credit, it seemed like Tybura went from being like, shit, I got to get this guy down to I got to make this guy think about something before I go for that takedown. Like, I got to land some punches. I got to get his respect a little bit. And he backed him up against the fence with punches. And then as soon as Tai Tuivasa's back touched that chain link, Tybura was like, and now changing levels into the takedown attempt. And it's just like, you could see Tai Tuivasa going between like, let me work my takedown defense to like, let me try to punch this guy. And every time he tried to switch to punch on the guy, that's when the takedown attempt got worse. And he just essentially gave it up by the end. And once he's planted down on the mat, couldn't do a whole lot about it. So it's just like, man, you have to at least shore up that aspect of your game, because you know at this point, people don't want to stand there with you, bro.
Yeah.
Like, the only people that will do it are the people who are really good technical strikers, like Ciryl Gane, who know that they have like a reach advantage a little bit on you. They can stand on the outside. They can pick you apart from there. Anybody else who's around the same size, around the same body dimensions, they're going to be looking for a way to plant you on the mat. And so if you don't come up with a solution to that one way or another, whether the solution is better takedown defense or a Derek Lewis-esque just get up strategy of jiu-jitsu, it's just going to keep happening.
Okay, I got an idea, though. What if Tai Tuivasa changes his nickname to the Strangler?
Okay.
What if he changes his nickname to the St. Mary's New South Wales Strangler? Then maybe people are going to come out and fight him with a different approach.
Just comes tripping off the tongue, in effect. If you go in there and suddenly one day Bruce Buffer announces him as Tai the Really Good Wrestler Guy Tuivasa... You're going to be like, oh, shit. We didn't prepare for this Tai Tuivasa.
Yeah.
What have we done?
Tai de la Silva, the Strangler Tuivasa. And maybe, I don't know, maybe people won't know what to expect so much. Throw them off the scent is what we'll do.
It's worth a try. That's all I'm saying.
Next question this week comes to us from Darkwing Duck, who writes, Brian Battle, Ange Losa, and Michael Bisping's surprised face speak on this. Did you see this?
Yeah.
First of all, you got it. You do, in fact, have to give props to Brian Battle for going out there in this fight, the welterweight co-main event of this fight night over the weekend, and looking sensational. He really did, for as long as it lasted, look like a world beater out there, like a guy that you need to take notice of at 170 pounds if you hadn't already. He ends up, unfortunate turn of events. He thumbs Losa in the eye. 1 minute into the second round, and we go through the whole rigmarole of the doctor stoppage and whatnot, and then it is determined that Losa can't go on, and we get the stoppage. Brian Battle, whether or not it was right or wrong, I thought cut a great promo on the mic after, where I was like, okay, now I will remember Brian Battle.
Yep.
So he did something to make me remember him by, which is always good. And then, insult to injury, you get the... I won't say hot mic, but you get the camera catching Michael Bisping in the cage, seemingly having a candid conversation with Brian Battle, talking about how what Angelo Losa did was bullshit. And so then Bisping gets surprised by the camera and puts his hand up in the camera lens like he just got caught coming out of his mistress's house at 5 o'clock in the morning by TMZ. So... I don't know. This is one of the more notable things that happened on this fight card, honestly. But yeah, just like I always say, are we really going to do this to these professional fighters? Are we really going to play them like this? That the guy goes out there, has a tough first round, and 1 minute into the second round, he's like, well, fuck it. I'm going to pack it in, grab my bindle stiff, and head back to the rails because this fight's not working out. I just don't believe it. I just don't believe that.
Yeah, especially because with a no contest, you know you're not going to get your win money.
Yeah.
You're probably depending on that because it's not like you're making huge show money if you're Lusa in a fight like this. At the same time, allow me to straddle both sides of the fence here, because at first, when Brian Battle stands there, I do respect this about the way Brian Battle handled this. He didn't stand there, give like the little half-hearted handshake after they read the decision, and then wait until an interview later to talk a bunch of shit to the dude. He talked it right there to his face.
And if I may interject just one thing here, I thought that Mike Beltran handled the stoppage, like the time between the stop of the action and then when they called the fight off, pretty well. Because you get him over there in the corner, you can hear him talking, he's patient, he's calm, he's seemingly doing everything right with Losa over there in the corner. But I thought it was a little bit of a mental error by Mike Beltran to have the no contest announced, like raise the hands, and then immediately hit the bricks. He was just like, out. Oh. Yeah, he was just like,
you got me. From the time I come in here to get him ready to fight to the time the decision is read, and then it's time for a smoke break. Yeah.
they said no overtime, so I am out of here. And that left Losa and Battle out there to do this jawing and would eventually turn into a near brawl situation. So perhaps a slight mental lapse by Mike Beltran.
Hey, Mike Beltran says, you know what? If you're not paying for overtime, I'll be in the break room sipping a Dr. Pepper. You let me know when my next fight is up. But the thing is, he doesn't just stand there, shake his hand, and then wait till later to talk shit about it. He tells him right then,
yeah,
like what he thinks of the way this fight ended. And he tells him, I was beating your ass.
Yep.
And I did think we maybe in the post fight and everything made a little bit too much of how it was going. He was winning.
Right.
Like he won the first round. He looked good. If you were to ask me to put a bet down on it at the end of the first round, I would have been like Brian Battle. I mean, I did put a bet down on Brian Battle to win, but like I would have put a bet down on Brian Battle to win that fight. But it wasn't over. It wasn't like he were beating the brakes off the dude so bad that he was like, I'll do anything to get out of here. And yet, when Brian Battle made the point that he was like, why is he going to stand here and act like he wants to fight me now? Like, he had an opportunity. And, you know, by that point, the eye didn't necessarily look terrible. You can't tell what it's like to look out of the eye, of course. But he's like, he wants to stand here and square off and tell me he's going to kill me now. Why aren't we still fighting then, bro, if you feel that way? And I felt like, okay, that actually might be a decent point. Because like you, I am not going to sit here and be like, any time a fighter pulls that, he must be scared. He must want out of there and everything. But if you were feeling like Brian Battle was getting the better of it, and then he pokes you in the eye and you go, okay, shit, so what am I supposed to do now? Like, restart this fight with my blurry-ass eye. It already wasn't going great. Like, it sets him up for more success. Do I go out there and get knocked out by the dude when my vision is compromised and he was already doing pretty well? I mean, I'm not saying that he necessarily did find a way out, but I could understand if you were making the calculation. Like, if you were winning the fight and you were down to one eye and you were like, I can still beat this guy with one eye and I need to get that win bonus. But if you were losing it, and the guy poked you in the eyes, not your fault. It's his fault. And you were going, I'm not seeing that well right now. It's this situation might've just tilted even more in his favor. Fuck that. What do I need to go and get knocked out for and reward him for poking me in the eye?
I just don't know. I just don't know if that's the thought process over there. If anything, I feel kind of bad for Ange, the Kinshasa Democratic Republic of Congo ninja, because he's over there, he's working in his second language. Like, this guy's not an English speaker. So I think a guy like that who maybe is not catching all of the instruction that he's getting from the referee and the doctor, which was clear. It's clear that he couldn't really understand what they were telling him because they were telling him to put the cold compress on his face. And he's like, he didn't know that what they were saying. Like, I feel like it's way more likely for a guy like that to, you know, speaking in English, not his native language, to say, I can't see, right? To not necessarily have his wits about him and maybe doesn't fully understand that as soon as he says that, they're going to stop the fight.
Yeah, and I did think that Michael Bisping was right to point out that you don't say, I can't see. I mean, we know that. Maybe in working in another language, it's less clear, but that you don't say, I can't see. And if you are going to say it, you wait until your 5 minutes is almost up before you decide that. Because an eye poke is one of those things that if you give it a couple minutes, it might clear up a little bit. It might improve.
And obviously, you can't contradict anything Michael Bisping has to say about eyesight in an
he's
MMA
really,
fight.
He's operating from a position of authority on that particular issue.
He has paid his dues
on that
side of things. All right, next question this week comes to us from Matt Webb, who writes, the last thing I thought I would be doing tonight was typing a question about Ovince St. Preux, but alas, here we are. Let's talk about the big man OSP real quick. Guy gets put up against a rising star in Kennedy Enzichukwu. Is a huge dog, and instead of following the script, he goes in there and puts on probably his best performance of his career. Ovince St. Preux has been a UFC stalwart and has shown flashes, but Saturday night for the first time looked like a complete fighter. Combination punching, head movement, striking in and out of rhythm. It was really a beauty to see. No better time to do than that than at the ripe old age of 40. Thoughts on OSP this fight, and does the man have something left in the tank after all for some late career anarchy? Because if you're asking me, I think he may be the liveliest of dogs going forward, and I'm here for it.
It seems impossible to me that OSP is 40, and then I go and I look it up. Not only, Chad, is he 40, he's almost 41!
Yeah.
He got a birthday next month.
He's been fighting in the UFC since 2013. And before what? That, and before that, he was in Strike Force going back to 2010.
This hurts my head just to think about it. I think of him as just a young whippersnapper. And maybe I'm just realizing that we're all older than I think sometimes. Because, yeah, I guess when I start to think about it, like...
27 fights in the UFC, if I'm adding correctly here.
I'm still never going to forget that one of the greatest moments on a UFC embedded or pre-fight hype reel kind of thing ever is when they booked him for that title fight against John Jones. And he went back. We had footage of him going back to a Tennessee Volunteers game and everything, talking to some of his former coaches and former coach. One of the coach was asking him, is like, hey, are you still doing that UFC stuff, basically? And he was like, yeah. I got a fight booked. I'm going to fight John Jones here in a couple weeks. And then you see the look on the coach's face where he does like kind of a double take where he's like, John Jones? You going to fight John Jones? And you're just like, yeah, no, bro. We all are kind of feeling that way. We appreciate you just putting it right out there like that.
I suppose it's possible that Ovin St. Preux has flipped some kind of switch at 40 years old and will from here on out be a different fighter. But I'm going to have to see it to believe it. I think it would obviously be out of the ordinary if somebody of that age were to suddenly become a different fighter. Ovin St. Preux has not won more than one fight in a row since 2017. He's lost to Felipe Lins, Tanner Boser, Jamal Hill, Ben Rothwell, Nikita Krylov, Dominic Reyes, Ilir Latifi. You know, obviously some of those are elite. Jamal Hill, one of the, fighting for the title, current recent interim champion, whatever they call him these days. So he's obviously at the top of the heap, but I don't know, man. I don't believe that Ovin St. Preux is suddenly going to vault up to the elite level of this division at 40, almost 41 years old. Albeit, if you're going to do it, now would be a great time where we're kind of looking around for guys to be at that level at 205.
Yeah, there's some opportunity there. You're right. It would. It's tough for me to picture. When Matt Webb says, you know, the liveliest of dogs, does he mean to go all the way to the title?
I assume that he means on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Right?
One of the best fighters of the night is what we're saying.
Yeah, you got to look at who he's fighting and then decide what you're going to do with your money, I think.
Yeah. But you know what? Give him credit. He did look good. He did look good in that fight. So at least there's that.
Next question this week comes to us from Zykel Minkus, who writes, if Corey McKenna taps out 3 times while having the shortest reach tied in the UFC, did it really happen? Leading into this fight, that is Jacqueline Amorim against Corey McKenna, they put up on the screen during the tail of the tape that Corey McKenna has the shortest reach among all active UFC fighters, which is a perfectly good stat. It's like an actual interesting stat. And also, how are they going to do your girl like that? Like the UFC, we're not out here doing journalism on the UFC broadcast. We know this. The UFC, they own the broadcast. We can decide what information to put out there and what information to withhold. And we do frequently. Yeah, you don't need to do Corey McKenna like that, do you? Put it up, be like, well, her opponent's got a 10-inch reach advantage, and she's got the shortest reach in all of the UFC. Come on, man.
Okay, though. Imagine you're on the UFC production team.
Yeah.
And they're like, we need to queue up some little on-screen graphics for all these fights. All of them. From the first prelim on, you gotta have something to put up there on the screen here and there. You imagine, you know, it's been a long day in the editing booth or whatever. you just knocked out some you finally found something on Jalel Fijo and Ode Osborne, and you're like, okay, how many more before we can call it a day? Ugh.
You just saw Mike Beltran walk by. He's headed home, but here you are, still Mike, in the office.
Mike has done been clocked out.
Unfortunately, I think it was Mike Beltran also refereeing this fight that he called a stoppage. He told him to keep going. He might have missed a tap and then finally did see the tap. It was an unfortunate circumstance out there in this fight all the way around.
I'm just saying, you're looking for anything of interest, anything you might be able to put on that broadcast. Let's say you stumble across this stat. It's 4:57 in the afternoon. The crew is like, hey, we're meeting for pizza and wings and beers down at Shooters. You know, are you going to make it? And you're like, well, here we go. I could just take this one. This one just fell in my lap. What am I going to do? Not use it? It's interesting. It is of note. Come up, plug that little card in there and be like, on my way, guys. Order me some lemon pepper.
You got a voicemail on your office phone from Dana White, and you think he's probably asking you to make a power slap reel. You're going to pretend like you didn't get it till Monday. Uh-huh. Oh, I didn't hear that one. Sorry. Yeah, no, I'll get right on that power slap highlight reel. Still, how are you going to do her like that? Next question this week comes to us from the last man standing at the Hood Dice game. So take that for what it's worth.
Okay.
Writes, just wondering if either of you were able to double back and watch Isaac Dolgarian versus Christian Rodriguez from last week's fight night card. It had a bit of everything from dueling 10-8 rounds to all the proverbial controversial scorecard at the end. How did you guys score it? And is this one of those rare cases where we can say about both fighters, that boy good? I like, first of all, that the question assumes we did not watch this live. But the question is basically,
the question assumes correctly.
Yeah, did you double back and watch this fight? I did watch it. And you know what? This is actually a heck of a fight. Honestly, like, I expected a different person from Isaac, the Midwest Choppa Dolgarian, before I tuned in. I admitted that already. But this guy's like actually a very exciting grappler to watch until he gets super tired. The first round of this thing, he was pulling out every tool in the toolbox, making it look good, making it look easy. And then, of course, ultimately ran out of steam. And then on the flip side, I think you got to give Christian Rodriguez credit for hanging in there for a tough, like, what, 7 minutes and 30 seconds, and then kind of turning this thing around down the second half of this fight. As for how it, I mean, so it's one of these fights that you could score a number of different ways. I will agree that I don't know how often it is you see each guy get himself a 10-8. Over the course of a three-round fight. That normally doesn't happen. Honestly, this thing was a draw. Let's be honest. Like, it was probably a draw if we're, you know, pulling our head out of the 10-8, 10-9 must system, 10-point must system and just talking. It was probably a draw.
Yeah, it is one of those where you say it's 28-27, and you're like, yeah, I bet it is. Like, just flip a coin as to who gets the 28 and who gets the 27, basically. A little bit surprised that not only did this one not get fight of the night, was no fight of the night.
Oh,
no bonus given for fight of the night. We just went with all performance bonuses, which at first I went, oh, okay, did we just go where anybody who got a finish? Nope. We still just picked four of the finishes and gave them to Tybura, Macy Chason, Jafel Filo, and Jacqueline Mamorim. So it was just like there were other finishes that did not get any sort of bonus. And we just decided, nope, there was no fight of the night. Which is a little bit surprising.
Wow, not even going to give one to Gerald Meerschaert for nope. Choking out the other Bam Bam?
Nope.
That's surprising, I think. Yeah, I mean, this if there was a fight of the night, it might have been Christian Rodriguez and Isaac Dolgarian. I mean, one of those guys obviously came up way short in the tank by the end of it, but it was still a fun fight to watch, I thought.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for Listener Mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern you want to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. Right now, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, Ben, we talked about this over on the Patreon page last week because this news kind of broke in the middle of the week that Mark Coleman had essentially saved his family, both of his parents, from a house fire that ultimately claimed the life of their dog, but did not claim any of the human lives, but almost claimed the life of Mark Coleman. He was taken to a medical facility for smoke inhalation. It seemed like it was very dicey for a while for Coleman. He eventually recovered. It seemed like he was going to be okay. They let him out of the hospital, but he has since been readmitted for pneumonia, which is actually, I don't think, that unusual, right, for someone to get to contract pneumonia or come down with pneumonia after a somewhat lengthy hospital stay. But he is back in the hospital now. And
I think he's back out now. I think he was readmitted and then back in again, because last update I saw,
he was out. Well, see, I didn't look in the last hour. So as far as I know, Mark Coleman news could be breaking every moment.
Yeah, well, this one, I'm looking at the MMA fighting story from Damon Martin, updated today at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, and it said that he was out of the hospital, then he had a brief readmission to the hospital where he was diagnosed with pneumonia, but there's a picture of him here in the gym, Chad.
Well, he did say, now see, this, I'm looking at a Stephen Morocco story from 3 p.m. Eastern time that says Mark Coleman readmitted to hospital with pneumonia.
Again?
But I can't be again, right?
Well, now I don't know what to believe.
No, this one is just from the single readmittance due to pneumonia. And Coleman does say in a video posted to his daughter's Facebook page, "Love you guys. I've got to get training. They won't let me out of bed."
Yeah, just let's take it easy, Mark. Well, we don't need to get training right away, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what's the rush if you're Mark Coleman? I pray to God you don't have a fight coming up, right?
Because I swear to God, if anybody has booked Mark Coleman to a fight, they need to be brought up on charges.
So, yeah, I don't know. But again, speaks to the, I don't know if you want to say character, but to the unique attitude of Mark the Hammer Coleman that has been on display now in this sport since the pioneer days, and a guy who has had a lot of troubles, a lot of health problems, a lot of ups and downs in his personal life, a lot of ups and downs in his fight career, and he's still out here swinging, man. We haven't found anything yet that could take out Mark Coleman, so 59-year-old guy rolling from the hospital bed to go out there and train with Matt Brown doesn't totally surprise me that much.
I also got to think that it's probably a little bit of a, like, what's the scene in, like, Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer where they get to sort of, like, observe their own funerals? Like, you go through something like this, something where it's like a life-threatening moment, and everybody, like, for one thing, you could scroll through the GoFundMe for Mark Coleman here, and it is like a walk down memory lane of MMA itself. Like, both in terms of, like, fellow fighters, coaches, managers, media figures, people that you haven't thought about in a while are all in there dropping some money for Mark Coleman. I know, because I went in there and dropped some money for Mark Coleman. It's just when you see some of the other names in there, and you're just like, oh, yeah. Like, the community came out for Mark Coleman in the wake of something like this. And that's got to be like a nice, but also like kind of intense and surprising feeling after something like this. Cause you know, I'm sure Mark Coleman feels at this point like that was close. You know, that one, that could have been it very easily.
Yeah.
And then to feel like, okay, you're still here. You still got more life to live. And everybody's so glad. And they're so eager to support you and have such fond feelings towards you. Like, you probably feel like you wish you didn't have to go through all this to find out or to be reminded of that fact. But I'm sure that in some ways that it is nice to see that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you saw that in the original outpouring of emotion during the video taken immediately after he was, brought out of the medically induced coma and wasn't intubated any longer and found out that his parents were alive. And you got this very real, you know, wash of emotion from Mark Coleman. And honestly, that's who he has been this whole time.
Yep.
Just a heart on his sleeve. Kind of what you see is what you get. Guy will tell you the truth under circumstances, even when he should lie to you. Mark Coleman, you and I have both interviewed him a couple of times in our jobs as MMA journalists. And he's like kind of a delightful fellow to talk to and will tell you any story at any time. Like I said, even while he admits to you during that interview, he'll say, I should not tell you this. And then he will tell you. That's the kind of guy Mark Coleman is.
Yeah. One of the things that I feel like we've talked about before and that becomes clear sometimes is that the sport like MMA and especially dominated by a promoter like the UFC, we have a hard time sometimes with our own history, with keeping or maintaining the history, especially there's a high rate of churn for the fans that come in and out of this sport. You got people who consider themselves like hardcore fans and everything who may have been watching this sport 4 or 5 years. And so they don't know really who Mark Coleman is unless you really on your own make a concerted effort to go back and learn about it. Like the UFC is busy promoting the next fight, right. The one that can make money tomorrow, not really busy on selling you the history because the history doesn't really make as much money. The history part seems like it's just sort of missing. Like that's what the part, I guess, like the media should or ideally could do a better job of. But it also seems like you got a lot of people who maybe they've heard of Mark Coleman, maybe never seen a Mark Coleman fight. Certainly don't appreciate the breadth of time and places that his career spanned.
Yeah. And a guy, we said this on the Patreon page, but a guy who like legitimately changed the game. And I don't know how many people you can say that about in MMA history. Like, obviously we have a short and very tumultuous history in this sport where the evolutionary process of fighting has progressed in leaps and bounds over the last 20, 30 years. But, you know, the list of people where you can say, yes, this person introduced XYZ tactic to the sport is probably very short. And Mark Coleman is one of those guys as the first really like enormous American wrestler who showed up, took people down and beat them up on the ground from their guard. Dan Severn had done some of that, but you know, Coleman is the guy who really showed us what was possible in that regard. And of course, using his signature maneuver, the headbutt, which he claims he would remain undefeated if MMA had not outlawed the headbutt. And in his own telling, because he was too good. He was too good at it. They had to outlaw the headbutt just to keep Mark Coleman from winning everything.
Well, and I will again quote Don Fry once told me that he'd go to war and charge up a hill with nothing but Mark Coleman and a bucket of water.
Yep.
There you go. That's Don. If Don Fry is sitting around talking about what a badass you are.
Yeah. It's a good sign.
How he feels like he could do anything with you at his side. I mean, yeah. You must have made an impression.
Yeah. Well, good to hear that Mark Coleman is apparently out of the hospital for a second time. And I guess I'll just have to keep hitting refresh over here on my Mark Coleman Google News search to keep abreast of the action. We hope it's all positive from here on out for Coleman. All right, let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And then we will move on to round number 2. Ben, has anyone in the history of MMA ever tried as hard as Colby Covington and Ian Gary are trying right now? Just bless their hearts. You know, they're trying so hard. First, you had Colby Covington either rent or steal somebody's boat. And he goes out there on the water in Miami in his billowing shirt and his rolled up pants. And he goes on for 3 minutes. 3 minutes about Ian Gary and Ian Gary's wife and calling him a cuck and talking about how Colby Covington is Donald Trump's favorite fighter and all this stuff. Just the whole video just reeks of desperation. He's trying so hard to get something on the books, to get something going, to revitalize himself. And then Ian Gary, of course, comes out with his own video, much better, if you ask me. The kind of video where I'm like, well, Ian Gary is out here standing up for the rights of women, which kind of seems like a pretty low bar for me, but in this sport is remarkable. And I got to be like, do I have to be an Ian Gary fan now? Am I an Ian Gary guy? Because he's out here saying women ain't objects. His wife's not a trophy.
Yeah. That's all it takes, by the way, to be the good guy.
Do I have to be an Ian Gary fan? But at the same time, are you fucking kidding me? Both these guys trying so hard, just putting everything they've got into trying to make anybody notice them. It's just, I don't know, man. You fucking kidding me? Just you can see the sweat, the wheels turning. We got to get something going. Got to get someone to notice us. Please acknowledge me. Just trying so hard.
I do think, though, that you have to spare a moment and acknowledge what an amazing bird it is for Ian Gary to say, I'm going to be the final chapter in your legacy of failure.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's better than anything that Colby Covington took 3 minutes with multiple takes to say out there on the boat that he stole from the marina in Miami.
Also points out you're the only person in UFC history to lose 3 world title fights, and you haven't got a single win against anybody in the top 15 right now. I mean,
pretty good.
That's kind of a 10-8 for Ian Gary on that one. Well, Chad, are you fucking kidding me? Guess who's back? Back again at UFC 301 in Brazil.
Yeah.
Your boy, Jose Aldo, ending his retirement, which never actually was much of a retirement to begin with. I'm going to read to you this story, this MMA fighting story from Damon Martin, where he just puts it in a perspective that we can understand. It's a stunning turn of events for Aldo, who called it a career back in 2022. Which we are in early 2024, Chad. It's not that long ago. After he suffered a loss to Merab Balishvili that ended his hopes for another title shot at 135 pounds, following that fight, Aldo, who was inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame in 2023, transitioned into a boxing career where he's competed twice in the past year, including a battle with fellow UFC veteran Jeremy Stephens. So, just in the time that he's been retired, Jose Aldo's had 2 boxing matches and been inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame, and now he's back. Couldn't take it away, the life away from this sport any longer. It was a grueling exile, and he just said no more. Are you fucking kidding me? This is one of the all-time great, never really retired unretirements that we've ever... I mean, this, again, just... We like to say, how do you know when an MMA retirement sticks? You know, wait 9 months, wait a year and a half, maybe look around to see if the guy is still competing in other combat sports. But are you fucking kidding me? Jose Aldo proving that he was not only a goat at featherweight in the UFC, he is a goat at the just never really did seem to take it seriously retirement. Are you fucking kidding me?
Does that mean he's good at the retirement or he's bad? Is he the goat or is he the worst?
He's It's the worst retirement, but also the greatest at not ever even kind of being retired during his retirement.
I know that we're doing 301 down there in Rio, and we got Jonathan Martinez on a 6-fight winning streak, and yet he is a guy who could probably use a win over a known name. But I just look at this thing and I think, why? Why? It's not like you're coming back if you're Jose Aldo for like a feature fight or a main event or a big time attraction. You're fighting Jonathan Martinez on the undercard of a pay-per-view headlined by Alexander Pantoja and Steve Ersig. And it's why? I don't. What? Why?
I'll also note this from the MMA fighting story. Under the UFC's anti-doping program, Aldo should be required to undergo 6 months of drug testing before competing again, but it appears that timeline will be waived to allow him to fight at UFC 301. Based on available online records, Aldo hasn't been tested under the anti-doping program since 2022. So, the new doping program for the UFC already sort of coming in handy.
I mean, I was actually just thinking today that the one thing that the UFC has accomplished with their new drug testing program is to basically take drug testing news out of the headlines.
Yeah.
It's almost like nobody even thinks about it anymore, except if you get a note in this story about Jose Aldo not having to get drug tested, which I guess if you're the UFC is probably exactly what you wanted.
It would be a hilarious time for him to show up just looking in incredible shape.
Vitor Belfort with Jose Aldo's head glued on top?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Jed, I would like to read to you a message posted to the social media platform formerly known as Twitter by one Nathan Donald Diaz.
Okay.
At NateDiaz209. Just to continue to make sure that the Stockton area code is the most well-known in combat sports history. Quote, "This was me for years before Connor even got here. They want you to die before you get out of these contracts. It's up to you to make something pop. No one gonna help you but you. Free Connor. It's at Paddy's Day." I think he's going for St. Paddy's Day. Maybe an autocorrect got him. "In this bitch." Shamrock emoji. Naturally. And what he has posted along with this is like a screenshot of a quote from Conor McGregor talking about how he was hoping to return in December. The fight keeps getting pushed back. Here he does, for the first time, maybe admit to a role he might have played in this ongoing delay, where he says, "It keeps getting pushed back. Then I lose interest and stop training for a while." Not stop training. I'm always training. Sure. But stop full training and start drinking a little bit.
A little bit. Something tells me Conor McGregor's idea of a little bit is different than some other people's.
Just a beer after work. So I'm going to go back, regroup, get full tested, and get ready to rock. The date's going to come, and then I'll be ready to rock. So maybe the closest we've seen to a genuine update about what's really going on with Conor McGregor. I'd also have to point out to you, Chad, we are now only days away, just mere days away from the new Roadhouse movie dropping.
Yeah.
How excited are you on a scale of one to about to lose your fucking mind?
Well, if you're on the fence about whether or not to sign up for the Patreon, I can tell you with 100% certainty that there will be a podcast featuring Ben Folks and myself talking about the new Roadhouse, because that's what that's for. That's why we have a Patreon, is for stuff like the new Roadhouse movie coming out, watching it and talking about it. So we will be doing that. I would say I would be close to losing my mind, but obviously the original Roadhouse is one of my favorite films just because of how fucking insane it is from start to finish. And it's almost like, why remake perfection? You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to be better than the original Roadhouse. Like, don't even try. Why do that? So my expectations
Monday,
are...
Monday. That's why.
Yeah. No, my expectations are tempered. Let's just say that. But on the topic of both Conor McGregor and Roadhouse, did you see the video of this man at the Roadhouse premiere getting interviewed? And I'll just say... the only thing I will say about it is that he was excited.
Very excited. Yeah. Very excited to be there.
It seemed like maybe he was the kind of excited that you only get if you lose interest in training for a while.
Seemed excited in a state of what I would describe as heightened alertness. Looking side to side, speaking rapidly.
Yeah.
Just ebullient overflowing with life itself, is how I would describe Conor McGregor at that premiere. Did not give me the impression that he had come straight from the gym to this premiere.
Why is Nate Diaz suddenly being so nice to Conor McGregor? Is it because he legitimately feels for him? Is it he's I remember.
No, it's not that one. Whatever the other ones are, it's not that one.
Well, Conor McGregor has said, he said in this same time frame of the quote you just read, he's got two fights left on his deal. And it seems, if anything, like Conor McGregor is one of the people who wants to get Conor McGregor back in the octagon, because it kind of seems like Conor McGregor wants to finish out Conor McGregor's contract.
Yeah. I mean, I think that both Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor are savvy enough to look at each other and go, there's a guy who probably wouldn't absolutely fucking murder me the way a lot of these other like current big names in the UFC would. And there's a guy where like we could do some business together.
Yeah.
Like there's a story you could sell people on the trilogy. People would watch that. And they probably each think this is a more winnable fight for me than pretty much every other thing on the table as a potential option. So I don't think it's necessarily like anybody's heart going out to anybody else. But I think that they're both capable of making that same calculation. And for Nate Diaz, there might be a genuine feeling of, I know what it's like to be dicked around a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So like you said, this is maybe the first time that it seems like anyone is being honest with us about what's really going on behind the scenes with Conor McGregor. But one of the points we keep returning to is Conor McGregor keeps saying he wants to fight. Obviously, Michael Chandler wants to fight. The UFC keeps saying we're interested in making this fight where we want Conor McGregor to come back and fight. Obviously, there's a bunch of ins and outs, a bunch of T's you got to cross and I's you got to dot and dollar signs you got to put on Conor McGregor's contract to get him to do that. But it kind of seems like somebody's not telling us the whole truth here, man. If everybody wants to fight, fucking let's fight. Like all of the people involved say they want to make this happen. And yet it doesn't seem like we are even close to making this happen. And when Conor McGregor and the UFC are both involved, it's hard to tell who's lying. So what's going on? What's really going on? Somebody's not telling us the truth.
You know, when you just said Michael Chandler's name there, I got a little Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, like, there's a name I haven't heard in a long time when it comes
to anybody should be standing on a boat in Miami cutting a 3-minute promo, it's fucking Michael Chandler. That's who should be doing it.
Who is it recently who was saying that he wanted to fight Michael Chandler? I don't know if it was after UFC 299. It was one of the guys who had fought and won, and he was saying, like, I want to fight Michael Chandler. I know he's going to wait. He thinks he's waiting on Conor, but you're going to wait the rest of your life, man, if you do that. And I'm kind of coming around to that point. Like, if you're Michael Chandler and you see this quote where Conor McGregor is like, oh, it keeps getting pushed back, and then, you know, I do a little bit of drinking, maybe get out. You see him at the premiere of Roadhouse. He's heightened alertness. All that kind of stuff is going on. Are you going like, God damn it. It's never going to happen, is it?
Maybe. Or maybe you're just rubbing your hands together. Maybe you're like, when it finally happens, I'm eating this guy's lunch. He's showing up with his heightened state of alertness. And like, I'm Michael Chandler. I'm watching this interview in the gym right now.
Well, I mean, I think that that's probably been part of his calculation for a while now, but here comes another tax season where you're basically going to go and tell your accountant, like, well, what did I do this year? Waited on Conor McGregor. That's what I did. You know, how many of those you got in you?
Yeah, I hope Michael Chandler has some passive income coming in, because otherwise it has been a long wait. I don't know, man. I'm like you. As some more days that go by, the less and less likely it starts to seem that we were going to see Conor McGregor back in there, although he does seem to indicate in every interview that he wants to do it. Just got to wait for the St. Paddy's Day celebration to get over, which in some ways sounds like I'm going to start training hard next week. I'm just about to start training hard.
March 21st, Chad, though. I'm just saying, put it on your calendar. March 21st, that is this Thursday, where Roadhouse becomes available on Amazon Prime. Should I get the snacks ready? You want to come over?
You sound a lot more enthused about it now than you did when it first... I remember bringing this up to you originally, and you were lukewarm, if anything. And now it seems like you have a heightened state of awareness around the release of Roadhouse.
I hate the idea. I hate the idea that I'm doing another Roadhouse. And everything I saw in the trailer made me think like, okay, like, this is exactly what I would expect that you guys were going to do. I think Jake Gyllenhaal, whatever, which one is it? I can't forget.
Njichukwu.
I think that Jake, the dude who is Maggie's brother, is an amazing actor and could be doing much more interesting work. But as long as we're doing it, as long as we're going to go ahead and make this goddamn movie, we got to watch it.
Well, yeah.
We got no choice.
It. Yeah, that's what they're counting on. That's why this Roadhouse exists. These people are going to be like, well, this probably sucks, but I have to watch it. You know I'm going to watch it. Anyway, Conor McGregor, who knows what's going on with him? Will we see him back? Will we not? Will Michael Chandler die of old age before it happens? Who's to say? But that's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, it has been a rough ride for Thug Rose Namajunas over the last few years. When she was UFC Women's Strawweight Championship back in 2020, 2021, 2022, defending her belt against anybody out there named Jessica Andrade or Zhang Weili, she seemed like she was really had hit her stride, was on top of the world. Then you lose the title in a split decision against Carla Esparza, where you are a huge favorite at UFC 274. You drop down, you make your flyweight debut, you fight Mano Furio at UFC Fight Night. You lose that one also, and now you lost two in a row, and you've been gone since September of last year. You come back fighting again at flyweight, and of course by drop down I mean move up, So here you go. You're fighting Amanda Ribas. You're doing it at the Apex. You're the main event of a semi-anonymous fight night card. Where are we at with the seemingly always tumultuous career of Rose Namajunas?
Yeah, it is surprising to find ourselves at this juncture, at this point. You know, Rose Namajunas here, 31 years old. It feels like she's been around forever because she did break into the game quite young. Achieved championship status quite young. I remember when she left the weight class, we were basically being like, but you got two wins over the champ. You know, like maybe now you could stick around here and have a pretty good case. Usually you don't leave the weight class unless it's like you got two losses against the champ or something, you know? That the Carla Esparza fight, that was an unfortunate one. Like that's to lose your title that way in that kind of a fight, that's got to really sting. That's still one of the worst fights, worst title fights I think we've ever seen in the UFC. It's just almost nothing happens. And it always felt like if Rose Namajunas had just done more, had just committed to being more active, she should beat Carla Esparza here. You know, it just seemed like her fight to lose. And she found a way to lose it. And then, you know, going up a weight class, having a loss in that one, and you're just kind of like, how did you go from, you know, maybe not so much in chronological time, but in fights so quickly from UFC champion to shit, you better win this one.
Yeah.
Because that's how this feels, doesn't it?
It does. And again, you know, the thing that we've been talking about with Rose Namajunas seemingly for years now is like, how long she keep going? How long is she going to keep going? Because she's one of these fighters. First of all, I don't think she's your typical fighter in terms of attitude or focus or anything like that. It seems like Rose Namajunas has a lot of other stuff going on that she is interested in aside from fighting. And so she seems like one of these people who could walk away at any moment. And so when you go through the career struggles, when you lose the title, when you lose back-to-back fights, you know, to the extent that I have thought about Rose Namajunas in a minute, the thoughts that I would have would be like, will we see her back? Or is she going to walk away and do something else? Then she returns, and she is returning to fight Amanda Ribas, who herself is 3-3 in her last six fights, at this fight night event, you know, middle of March at the Apex, a card that looks just fine, but not isn't going to knock anybody out for sure. And it's just, it's surprising to me. The whole thing is surprising that this is how Rose Namajunas re-enters the sport after this time off. She is, in fact, if you're scoring at home, going off at as a little more than 2-1 favorite.
Yeah. So I was a little surprised by that, honestly. Just because of what we've seen of her recently and what we haven't seen of her recently. And now I know that Amanda Ribas comes in here and has been on the win one, lose one kick for like the last, you know, 3 years or something. And if that pattern is to hold, this is the one she's supposed to lose, right?
Yeah.
I'm certain
that's what odds makers are looking at.
Yeah. They know a pattern when they see one. Chad, you don't get to be a professional sports book odds maker without having good pattern recognition skills. Okay.
Yeah, he asked AI what was gonna happen, and it was like, well, I don't know. Looks like she's due to lose one.
Every time she wins one, she loses the next one. But when you do look at it, you're like, okay, it seems like you have a track record of beating the lesser known people in the division and then losing to anybody we've heard of, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet still, like, I'm a little concerned for where Rose Namajunas might be at this point.
If I were to
think about looking for an underdog on this one, I'd probably look at Ribas mainly because of my concern for whether Namajunas is all in and still has it in her to get it done.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like she's in many ways disappeared, right? After the last loss, and now suddenly here she is again. And I know that that's not necessarily out of the ordinary for a fighter coming off a loss, maybe had to regroup a little bit, take a few months off, try to figure out what the future was. But for a fighter the caliber of Rose Namajunas, I don't know. It's like I turned around, looked at the fight card, and I was like, well, holy shit, Rose Namajunas is back. And she's fighting on this ESPN fight card where the co-main event is Justin Taffa and Carl Williams. So, I don't know.
It's Justin Taffa today. By the time we get around to fight, it'll probably be the other Taffa. Maybe we'll get a cousin in there or something.
Too many Taffas. Just like I said last week, we are officially in too many Taffa territory. Too many Taffas out there. You also got Edmund Shabazian on this thing. You got Billy Q on this thing. So there's some people on here who have stuff going on and some people we know, but you know, all told, you look at the card, you look at the Apex, it's probably worth watching, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like one that you want to cancel your plans for.
No. And in fact, I have plans. I will not be canceling them. Check this one out on Sunday.
You're going to circle back? You're going to double back to watch this one?
I'm a circle back. You know, I'm going to the Rock Lotto. Got to go to the Rock Lotto every time that event pops up on Saturday. So I'll circle back Sunday morning with a couple Advil and a cup of coffee. Find out what happened to your boy Edmund Shabazian. Talk about a guy you haven't thought about in a little while.
There you go. Ben Folks. He'll be doubling back just like I will. All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff and then we'll get out of here for this week. Ben, what's your Just Saying Stuff?
Chad, did you see that Tom Aspinall and John Jones ran into each other?
I saw a photo of them standing next to each other. It is time for a forensic investigation into a photograph of John Jones and Tom Aspinall standing next to each other.
Not only is a photograph, I saw a video. Tom Aspinall reaches out and pats John Jones on the shoulder. John Jones immediately grabs his hand and removes it from him. Like, no, you're not going to be touching me, sizing me up, feeling out the distance, whatever. Tom Aspinall, like, you know, we can be friendly and everything, but we're not going to be doing all that. This quote, I want to read you this quote from Tom Aspinall in an interview with JN Media, talking about running into John Jones. It was good. We were at the same event, so obviously it makes sense for me. We've got the interim champion and the undisputed champion at the same event, but it's a bit weird that there's an undisputed champion and an interim champion, because undisputed means no one can dispute it. But if there's another champion, I don't know. It's a little bit weird the way it works. It was good. We had a little chat. It was all good. I think he thought I was putting a hand on his shoulder being disrespectful, but I wasn't. I wasn't there to be disrespectful. I was doing it in a friendly way. I'm not going to cause more beef. I'm trying to fight the guy and take his belt. That's what I want. I have no beef against the guy. To me, it's just friendly, nothing crazy. And then asked if he'd be bothered if he never gets a chance to fight him. No, because I don't think he's going to fight me anyway. I'd be very, very surprised if me and John Jones ever stepped in the octagon together. I'm trying to get the fight, but I'm not trying to get it. I'm not trying to get it realistically. I'm trying to have a bit of fun and see what he's all about. Like today, I don't expect the fight to be off the back of this, because in all honesty, I don't think the UFC is going to go for it. I don't think John Jones is going to go for it either. So I'm not deflated at all, because I wasn't expecting the fight anyway. And then later it goes on to say, Curtis Blaydes it is then. I'm just saying this week, why does Tom Aspinall continue to be the most reasonable man in the heavyweight division when it comes to all this stuff? Because he's not wrong about a single thing he's saying here.
No.
Where he's just like, it doesn't make sense to have an interim champ and an undisputed champion because the words just don't even add up. Yes, Tom, you're right. Talking about, I'm just having fun with that. I don't think that he's really going to do it. The UFC doesn't seem to want to make the fight. John Jones doesn't seem to want to make the fight. Yes, Tom, again, you are right. Curtis Blaydes it is then. God damn it, Tom. Why do you have to keep being right? I'm just saying, Tom Aspinall, I don't know how you got to be like both a huge dude who's super good at fighting and is also pretty reasonable in all ways, because usually those things don't go together. But damn it, I appreciate it. I'm just saying.
And now for some proper analysis of the heavyweight division, we're going to kick it over to Tom Aspinall. Tom, how do you see the division shaking out this week? Well, Ben, this week I've been seeing a lot of videos floating across my timeline of Mike Tyson looking pretty good out here hitting those pads, looking like his old self, just, you know, bobbing, weaving, pivoting, just killing these pads, man, just absolutely destroying these pads, hitting the guy wearing the big pad vest so hard, just looking like a world beater out here. And I'm just saying, let's try not to get our hopes up. Okay?
Seems like you just got our hopes up.
I know you're seeing the videos. I know you're seeing the videos of Mike hitting the pads, and you're thinking, Iron Mike still got it. Look at him. The speed is still there. The power, the foot. Let's not get our hopes up. I'm just saying, we've seen this before. We've done this a couple times now. Let's just not get our hopes up about the Mike Tyson looking ferocious training footage, okay? I'm here to help you guys. I'm only trying to help. I'm just saying, let's not get our hopes up, okay?
Okay, but do you remember when we watched that Golden Boy Promotions fight with Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz?
Yes, I do remember.
And do you remember we were sitting there watching it and Chuck Liddell came down, walked down to the cage, did a little bit of shadow boxing standing in his corner, and just the way he was moving and shadow boxing, we went, oh no.
Yeah, no, it was clear he was going to lose as soon as he hit the door. As soon as he hit the aisle to walk down to the cage, you're like, well.
I mean, Mike looks way better than that.
Don't. It's like he's not listening to me. You didn't listen to what a word I just said. Let's not get our hopes up here. I'm just saying.
True or false, Mike looks way better than that.
Yeah, he does. He looks way better. All right, that's going to do it this week for the Co-Main Event Podcast. Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be over on the Patreon page for at least part of the week this week during spring break, and then back to our normal schedule the following week. We appreciate the support. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Check us out, patreon.com/co-main-event. As for right now, we're done. We are through. We are out. I don't want anyone to get hurt, you know? And that includes Mike Tyson, but it also includes all of us with our...
Emotionally, you mean.
Yeah. Our inner childrens that remember, you know, sneaking into the living room when our dad had the Mike Tyson pay-per-view rented and watching him knock out, you know, somebody...
Trevor Burbick,
exactly. And just, I don't want that inner child to get wounded. You know what I mean? I don't want us to get our hopes up.
Can I tell you something?
Oh, okay, fine. What is it?
People are going to get their hopes up.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to be the 45-year-old dad of this sport. know, as long as everybody works as hard as they can, that's the only thing we can control. It's just like, let's, you know, whether we win or lose, that's not what we want to get hung up on. Right?
Yeah, we don't want anybody to get hurt in this fight business.